Chapter 7. The History of Witchcraft in Asia. By way of recap, we see that the definition of today's Wicca is literally, witchcraft. The practice is all over the world, and the only protection from it is getting saved through the free gift from Jesus that you can receive because of his sacrifice on the cross. If you are already Christian, there is no need to be afraid of the demonic activities from the witchcraft and the occult. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power, love, and a sound mind. We only need to turn to Jesus and, as a Christian, we can access the authority of Jesus' name to deal with evil. We saw with the history of witchcraft that this is nothing new, because old-fashioned witchcraft has just been repackaged over and over with new names. Today that includes Wicca. Witchcraft has been around since the Tower of Babel where, just a couple hundred years after God judged the world through a global flood, that wiped out virtually every human, those people rebelled against God, refusing to spread out across the earth and, instead, building a tower. As the Bible and even the archaeological evidence shows, those Babylonians also rebelled by majorly getting into witchcraft. That evil practice then spread to the rest of the world when God again judged man by confusing his language. Those occult witches from Babylon dispersed across the earth to permeate the planet with those occult practices. Again, witches exported their ways from Babylon to Egypt and then Greece until it finally came to the Roman culture where they adopted the Greek gods, only changing the names. With those gods, the Romans also became saturated with Greek witchcraft. That was still going strong when Jesus showed up on Roman-occupied territory there in Israel. So, the early church had to deal with a lot of Roman witchcraft like their Sibylline and Delphi oracles. Remember how we saw that the Delphi sat above what was most likely hallucinogenic gases seeping out of the ground, from which she supposedly got information handed down from the gods. However, the truth is that her words were probably only the delirious ranting of someone constantly drugged. Of course, all the Roman spirits were just demons. But every Roman household built shrines for these supposed gods. Like the Greeks before them who had Hecate as their witchcraft goddess, the Romans worshipped that same demon, only changing the name to Trivia. So, again, there is an interesting piece of trivia for you. Like prior civilizations before them, Roman archaeology shows they had witchcraft spells, amulets, curses, and voodoo-like cursed dolls. Witchcraft was everywhere in Roman culture. They used their witchcraft for societal aspects like chariot race bets, murder, love, health and legal cases. Roman culture was full of witchcraft. From the Tower of Babel just east of the Mediterranean Sea, you will notice the arrows go to the north, eventually ending up in Europe, as well as a couple of arrows pointing south. So far, those two directions are what we have been dealing with in the previous look at Egypt in the south and of course northwest of the tower is Rome and Greece. Another arrow points to the east, which is where we will go in this chapter, to Asian witchcraft. During the research for this study, I had already been familiar with a lot of European witchcraft because, from there, it eventually came over to the Americas where the Puritans and Pilgrims had to deal with those practices. But this Asian aspect has personally been a real eye-opener. I know there is a lot of evil occult and witchcraft in the world and God sees it all, but in tracing the trail of all this witchcraft history, you come to find out the whole planet is covered in witchcraft and other occult practices. It is not just America and a few of the world's big cities. It is crazy how pervasive the practices are worldwide and in every walk of life. But in this chapter, we're dealing with Asia and an interesting aspect we'll see if you read your Bible, which I highly recommend, is that Israel's time of becoming involved in witchcraft, as the result of their rebellion against God, actually came through them learning Asian witchcraft practices. Let's take a look at that in Isaiah 2:5-9 where the Israelite men get involved in witchcraft, after which the Bible also talks about the ladies doing the same. Isaiah has strong words for both of them, who learned this stuff from the east.
Come, descendants of Jacob, let us walk in the light of the Lord. You, Lord, have abandoned your people, the descendants of Jacob. They are full of superstitions from the east, they practice divination, sorcery and witchcraft, like the Philistines and embrace pagan customs. Their land is full of silver and gold, there is no end to their treasures. Their land is full of horses, there is no end to their chariots. Their land is full of idols, they bow down to the work of their hands, to what their fingers have made. So, people will be brought low and everyone humbled, do not forgive them.
Obviously, God feels strongly about those practices, and the ladies were doing the same as we see in Isaiah 3:16. Notice here how the ladies carried themselves.
The Lord says, the women of Zion are haughty, walking along with outstretched necks, flirting with their eyes, strutting along with swaying hips, with ornaments jingling on their ankles. Therefore, the Lord will bring sores on the heads of the women of Zion, the Lord will make their scalps bald.
Hey, when God is threatening to take a lady's hair, would you say he's a bit upset? Yes, that is not a good sign. Isaiah continues.
In that day the Lord will snatch away their finery, the bangles and headbands and crescent necklaces, the earrings and bracelets and veils, the headdresses and anklets and sashes, the perfume bottles and charms, amulets, the signet rings and nose rings, the fine robes and the capes and cloaks, the purses and mirrors, remember how mirrors are always big with witchcraft, and the linen garments and tiaras and shawls. Instead of fragrance there will be a stench, instead of a sash, a rope, instead of well-dressed hair, baldness, instead of fine clothing, sackcloth, instead of beauty, branding. Your men will fall by the sword, your warriors in battle. The gates of Zion will lament and mourn, destitute, she will sit on the ground.
Whether it is the men or the ladies, God is not pleased when his people get involved in witchcraft. But where does it say their witchcraft came from? He said, they are full of superstitions from the east. We tend to think Israel was isolated, but they weren't at all. Especially with King Solomon, who had access to many nations, from which people traveled to get his counsel as the wisest and richest man on the planet. Apparently, that included contacts from the east. Let's take a look at this video transcript that will remind us how witchcraft originated in Babylon, spread all the way to the east, and then eventually came back to Israel.
After the flood, Noah and his family gave thanks and offered sacrifices to God for preserving them. God told Noah to go and multiply and fill the earth. Noah's family flourished and multiplied. But they did not spread all over the earth. Instead, they moved down from the mountains of Ararat and settled in the plain of Shinar and dreamed of building a big city. Come, let us build a city and a tower to the heavens so that we may make a name for ourselves and not be scattered over the face of the whole earth. God, the creator of the heavens and the earth, looked down upon them and saw the city and the tower they were building.
They are united and spoke the same language. Now, nothing they imagined doing will be impossible for them.
So, God went down and confused their language, so they could not understand each other. And God scattered them over the face of the earth.
And they stopped building the city. They left Babel by foot, by cart, and by boat.
Because of the language barriers, each family group became isolated and developed distinct physical traits and cultures.
Roughly 200 years after the flood, what were the people already engaged in? It was major witchcraft practices that they then took to the rest of the planet. Isaiah was approximately written around 700 BC, 1,500 years after the Tower of Babel. So, when you think about it, that is plenty of time for people practicing witchcraft to get all the way over to the east and for Israel to get in contact with them and bring it back home. Again, we are seeing that God does not want his people involved in this evil. So, let's take a closer look at the Asian witchcraft that influenced Israel even though God told them never to get involved with it. Asia is made up of about 50 countries, so unlike the previous areas in this study, Egypt, Greece, Rome, and Babylon, where we've had the liberty to do a whole chapter on each, with Asia, we only have time to hit two of the most prominent areas, Japan and China. I could easily do a chapter on each, instead, we will combine the two. As far as any other countries in Asia, we will have a video transcript from Indonesia and quickly hit some other Asian highlights, but the huge amount of information in Asia means we don't have time to cover Korea and much of the Asian areas of the world. I am just trying to give you an overview of how the East was also flooded with witchcraft, just as the Bible tells us. So, let's start with the Japanese witchcraft, which separates itself into two major categories, the first of which you may be familiar with as the Japanese tradition of having entities they call, familiars pun intended. Overall, the Japanese have two major types of witches, which are the fox witch and snake witch, though the cat witch is also popular. The root of those animal beliefs comes from the Japanese being taught that familiar spirits inhabit animals. And these familiars supposedly teach and lead people deeper into witchcraft and the occult, while supposedly also protecting them. But are those entities? They are demons even though practitioners of this witchcraft cannot outright say so. Telling a potential follower that they will be learning directly from demons would cause most to freak out. That is why those pushing the witchcraft have to relabel the experience as something pleasant like communing with wonderful familiar spirits, animal guides that exist only to help people. Doesn't that sound better for recruiting? Of course, it does, but the whole fictitious story is just a demonic deception. Here is a 16th century English depiction of a witch feeding her familiars. What we're looking at are possessed animals. Can demons inhabit animals? Yes, because we certainly see that scripturally, like when Jesus sent a man's demons into pigs that then ran down the hill and drowned themselves. In fact, the average family or individual in Asia were actually encouraged to possess a good personal spirit, demon, as opposed to the bad spirit, demon, that a witch was said to have.
Familiars, sometimes referred to as familiar spirits or animal guides, were believed to be supernatural entities, demons, that would assist witches and cunning folk in their practice of magic. According to the records of the time, they would appear in numerous guises, often as an animal, but also at times as a human or humanoid figure. The animals are more popular in Asia. When they served witches, they were often thought to be evil, while when working for the average Joe-san, they were often thought of as good, although there was some ambiguity in both cases. The former was often categorized as demons, while the latter were more commonly thought of and described as fairies.
Apparently, the witch was what might even be rightly labeled a demon, while average folks were told to acquire a lovable fairy or happy little leprechaun that were also demons. Though they have been popularized by cartoons, we will get to some of the entities that we all thought were just harmless kids' tales. Instead, they are more familiar spirits, demons. As we analyze this whole witchcraft practice and process being developed here in Asia, which is exactly like those evil practices set up all over the world, it is eye-opening to see that the entire movement has happened through human contact with demons that lead, direct, teach people how to do evil. And that includes whether or not they want to characterize it as help from benevolent familiar animal guides. Again, it is no wonder God tells us to stay away from this stuff. Later we will get into so-called modern witchcraft, which is not modern at all, since it's just recycled evil practices. And it is all common still today, as Wicca even admits. They don't use the Asian-style fox, snake, or cat necessarily, but they do use pets and wildlife as witchcraft aids. For example, look at Disney's animated version of Pocahontas, Pocahontas. We maybe should call it Pocahontas because, as we have seen in other studies, that twisted history was a real rip-off of the actual Pocahontas, who was a born-again Christian. However, when Disney got hold the inspiring true story of Christians helping people, they turned her into some American Indian shaman worshiper, who followed the teachings and direction of nature spirits, demons. Another term often used for familiar spirits is a doppelganger, which is a German word meaning double goer or double walker. It is said that a doppelganger walks with a person, always available to them as a sort of personal helper. Instead, it is actually a demon clinging to a person while claiming they are only there to help, teach, and protect them. But if you know anything about demons, like the information in John 8, Satan is not only a liar but also the father of all lies from the beginning. He's also a murderer, which lets us know that Lucifer's helpers, demons, have only one ultimate goal, and that is to lie, deceive, and ultimately kill you before you decide to follow Jesus Christ. And that's the lie of witchcraft that claims to help people while instead getting them wrapped up in the occult so they will be led away from Jesus Christ long enough to take their last breath, still separated from God, and thus ending up in hell. Now, let's get back to the different kinds of Japanese witches, like this fox witch, a fox witch supposedly keeps a demon guide companion in a box. Two types of fox witches are Kisyun Tsukai and Kitsune Mochi. Kisyun is the Japanese word for fox, with Kisyun Mochi being the private solitary practitioner. The Kisyun Mochi is someone having a fox demon that travels with them wherever they go. They supposedly acquire that familiar spirit by giving it food offerings. A Japanese person forms a pact with their demon to sell their soul to the devil. This helper of his is in exchange for so-called magical services. The Japanese believe these demons inhabiting animals can become invisible, retrieve desired objects, shape-shift, and deceive their enemies. And just as the Bible warns, these critters ultimately want to inhabit people. They want to live inside of you, which is what the Japanese call Kisyun Tsukai. As you can see in this drawing, ultimately the demon inhabiting the fox wants to go in the person. So, a Kitsune Tsuki is a person that has become full-blown demonically possessed by the fox spirit. One guy, who lived in the 1800s, describes someone that this happened to in his area. As you read this, think of the New Testament warning about demonic possession.
Strange is the madness of those into whom demon foxes enter. Sometimes they run naked shouting through the streets. Sometimes they lie down and froth at the mouth, and yelp as a fox yelps. and on some part of the body of the possessed, a moving lump appears under the skin, which seems to have a life of its own. Prick it with a needle, and it glides instantly to another place. They eat only what foxes are believed to like, and they eat a great deal, alleging that not they, but the possessing foxes, are hungry.
As I've mentioned, the fox spirit and snake spirit are most popular, with the cat spirit also being prominent, but the Japanese actually have a lot of different animal spirits. Those are only the top three. The same premise applies with this snake familiar, as with the fox familiar, though the Japanese would not label it a demon. The demon inhabits the snake, which travels with a person to give them power, just as the fox demon supposedly does. What is wild is that this snake spirit possession is still functioning today in the East and other countries. The idea is that snake possession supposedly allows people to become clairvoyant so that they can be used as an oracle through the claim that they can predict the future. Does that sound familiar? That is Acts 16:16, with Paul kicking the demon out of a slave girl, who earned cash for her owners by fortune-telling. Unfortunately, that same evil still happens today. Here is an example in this video transcript.
African man. In Europe, I know that people don't believe that there are demons or evil spirits.
Another African man holding down a possessed man and addressing the man's demon. Who are you? Are you Bob?
Or Estaro?
I want to know.
In the mighty name of Jesus, I command you to come out of your den.
What is your name?
Demon, I command you now.
What is your name? The possessed man answers with an unintelligible name. A Christian woman talks about a possessed woman. They called me. And when I saw her, it became clear to me that there was a spirit in her. Which leader talking about the possessed woman? It is a cobra. Now I will make an oracle out of her, so that the spirit can talk through her. She has to be taken through the ritual. Part of that bloody ritual is shown. African pastor. Their practices have its roots in the satanic kingdom, not in the kingdom of God. And everything that is of Satan is evil, is demonic, and we cannot accept those things.
Scenes of demonically possessed people and Christians working to free them.
A Christian has his hand on the forehead of that possessed woman, the witch leader made into an oracle. I set you free. Jesus, come now. Have your liberty in Jesus' name.
Amen. I love how that ends with the woman delivered from her demon, or demons, through Jesus Christ. It is interesting how our so-called modern society downplays demon possession as if it doesn't happen. But it does, and I think a lot of demon-possessed people self-medicate, get medicated into being mute, or are put away in psych wards because the diagnosis is just a psychological issue. I'm not saying some aspect of it is not psychological, but having visited psych wards to witness and pray for people over the past 20 plus years, I'm telling you, there is a different spirit in those places. A lot of those people are demonically possessed, even if our secular society refuses to admit it. The demonically possessed are given drugs, which is not going to help that issue. The only answer to deliver those people is Jesus Christ. He is what they need. Our modern mindset leads society to rule out demon possession like it does not happen, even if it seems to be as rampant today as it was in the New Testament times. Again, why do you think Jesus encountered so many demonically possessed people back then? As we saw, Roman culture was deeply infiltrated with witchcraft, so the prevalence of it in Jesus' time was no surprise. Now, in that video transcript, the African witch leader wanted the woman to get possessed by the same snake spirit, familiar, that Japanese witches seek. The video even shows the woman's tongue flicking out like a snake. Again, just like biblical times, the man had the woman get possessed so he could make an oracle of her for his money-making purposes. Here is Paul speaking in Acts 16:16.
Once when we were going to the place of prayer, we were met by a female slave who had a spirit, having a spirit of Python, by which she predicted the future. She earned a great deal of money for her owners by fortune-telling.
Because witchcraft so permeated Roman society during the time of in the early church, Paul encountered a girl who had been deliberately possessed with a snake spirit, a Python spirit, to become an oracle. Occultists had done it to the girl to make money. So, what did Paul do? He delivered her in the name of Jesus Christ. And everyone was excited about it, right? No, the men making money from her possession were very angry because their way of making a living got destroyed. As you just saw, this practice still goes on around the world today, certainly including Japanese witchcraft. Besides the fox, snake, and other animal spirits, another category of Japanese witchcraft about families of witches, or generational witchcraft.
These hereditary witches, known as Tsukemono Tsuji, are feared and venerated, though they are also often shunned due to the stigma attached to their kitsune. Once a family has been identified as Tsukemono Tsuji, marriage becomes difficult, especially for females in the house.
They believe familiar spirits are passed down the maternal line through the ladies in the family. So, if you find out the girl you're dating is from a family of witches, you should go in understanding that she is literally going to raise demons. She will be working to implant real demons in your kids. Hey, at least when you get mad, it'll be okay to call them little demons. But for those of us thinking straight, that might be a deterrent to marriage. These Japanese generational witches are just like European witchcraft traditions that stress the importance of familiar spirits that are supposedly passed down through a family's maternal line. Of course, the teachings are similar because it all comes from the same source. The Japanese also have their version of talismans that are typically in written form on pieces of paper called ofuda, which means slip of paper or card.
In the Japanese religion, an ofuda refers to the following items: a talisman issued by a Shinto shrine on which is written the name of the shrine or its enshrined kami, spirits, and stamped with a shrine seal. Such ofuda are often placed on household Shinto altars, kamadana, and revered both as a symbol of the shrine's deity, or deities, and a medium through which the kami, spirits, in question can be accessed by the worshipper.
Again, that is the Japanese talisman they relied upon to supposedly perform a couple of roles. First, they used them just like the earlier societies we looked at, where people would carry around special rocks, dolls, or figurines for protection. Besides individual and home protection, the ofuda talisman was also said to bring good luck. And again, showing this is nothing new, the Japanese had a portable version of the ofuda that was put into a small bag for people to carry with them, exactly like the mojo bags already mentioned. The Japanese called it a gofu talisman. Again, the other cultures we've seen have been more reliant on figurines and rocks, while the Asian cultures normally have their talisman in written form, including special words from an important local shrine and even its stamp of approval. That is, Japan's people relied upon for protection. Along with the writings, like witchcraft words in other cultures, the Japanese had a practice of using specific words for certain spells when they wanted to put a curse on someone. They were also instructed to perform the right mannerisms in order to access the power to make it do what the person wanted. The Japanese called those words kododama or kodotama, which means word spirit or word soul. So, these talismans didn't have scribbling like, stay away from me, or give me good luck. It was specific words they believed to have the power of good luck, protection, or the ability to produce some sort of a negative effect on another person.
Kododama or kodotama, word spirit slash soul, refers to the Japanese belief that mystical powers dwell in words and names.
If you have seen our very extensive study called Charismatic Chaos, you know that practice is also something the Word of Faith movement relies upon. They claim there is power in our words. They tell us we better not dare say anything negative because we are all little gods, who have the power through our words to create any positive or negative reality. And that is why they say we need to practice positive words and phrases that will create any reality we desire. But that's just flat-out witchcraft. Without being able to give all that huge charismatic chaos study, I'll just say that modern-day charismatics in the church, including Word of Faith teachers, not only promote Hinduism and New Age, they also give their followers occult witchcraft practices to perform. Yet, people want to say it is bad for us, Christians, to call those false teachers out. I do not agree. Just as Word of Faith people practice, the Japanese have kododama or kodotama as their magic words.
English translations include soul of language, spirit of language, power word, magic word, and sacred sound. The notion of kododama presupposes that sounds can magically affect objects, and that ritual word usages can influence our environment, body, mind, and soul. Kododama is related to Japanese words such as kodoage, words raised up, invoke the magical power of words, kodomuke, directed words, cause submission through the power of words, and jumon, magic spell, magic words, incantation.
That is exactly the same practice used in the modern Word of Faith movement, which is 100% witchcraft with a little Christianese slapped on it to sneak that word of false faith into our Christian church. Now, one prominent area where the Japanese use their kododama or kodotama, the power of words, to supposedly create a person's own reality, is not only in the full practice of witchcraft, but also with their martial arts. If you want to start a fight, start picking on someone's practice of martial arts or yoga. With the latter, when you try to tell a Christian involved with yoga that it comes straight out of the occult religious practices of Hinduism, and that you cannot separate the two, they will often reply that they only do it for exercise. But we dealt with that in our studies called Hinduism and the Dangers of Yoga and New Age and the Last Day Deception. Why would you want to perform a Hindu ritual for exercise? How about some push-ups, jumping jacks, running, or weightlifting? Why does it have to be yoga, which is flat-out Hinduism? In fact, the very word, yoga, means yoke. When practiced, yoga is purposefully yoking yourself with a Hindu deity, demon. A lot of yoga is practicing snake postures meant to simulate a snake. The other help that can really rile people up is when you say they should think twice before getting involved with martial arts. Again, I won't go into a lot of detail here, but we dealt with that extensively in our Buddhism study where we expose martial arts, as well as what the Star Wars movies are promoting. For example, most of us know martial artists are often taught to say, "Hi-ya." What does that mean? Is it, "Hi. Hello. I like your hair?" No. They admit that those specific words come from Kododama/Kodotama. Martial artists use those words as a way to supposedly tap into a magical power that will give them power and strength against their enemies. In fact, martial arts teach that practitioners can use the power of words to push objects and opponents away without even touching them. You may think this is all just an interesting theory and I am picking on martial arts, but listen to this.
The founder of Aikido used Kodotama, power words, or magical words, as a spiritual basis for his teachings and embodies the essence of Shinto, the indigenous religion and spiritual foundation of Japan. Shinto and Aikido are tied together by their common foundation, the Kododama principle.
More specifically, he said Aikido is based on the Kodotama principle and is the highest way to practice Kodotama. So, it is not just a small part of it or some wild theory. Magic words are woven into Aikido.
It is the means by which one realizes his true nature as a god and finds ultimate freedom.
But that founder of Aikido is actually teaching a practice that is not meant to give freedom. Instead, it brings on bondage. Besides indoctrinating people into Asian philosophies that counter biblical Christianity, he's teaching Asian witchcraft. In fact, here is a video transcript where practitioners are admitting they use words in an attempt to draw on powers.
Narrator: Kodotama, a Japanese spiritual tradition that has spanned thousands of years, was the practice in which Morihei Ueshiba, the founder of Aikido, was trained. Aikido instructor Jack Wada demonstrates maneuvers with an Aikido pole.
Narrator:
Aikido instructor Jack Wada showed me the Taurus nature of the Kodotama chant, their core practice of tuning one's consciousness.
Wada:
About Kodotama and Kodotama, the two words in Chinese characters. In Japanese, koto is like word, and tama is like soul or spirit. And so, Kodotama can be kind of the spirit or the soul of the universe expressed in sound.
The sensei is shown meditating. Wada: The sensei, karate teacher, said that these sounds generated, activated, and sustained are what he called creation.
In other words, I think he was looking past the obvious physical universe into almost like an energy blueprint for creation. Wada demonstrates the Kodotama chant.
Narrator:
Apparently, sound also has transformative powers when aligned with the Taurus, and this seems to have been known long, long ago. I personally had felt what it was like to tap into this energy through Aikido. A man draws an energy field around himself by tapping into that energy through Aikido.
At the end, even the narrator admitted to feeling occult powers when practicing martial arts. Again, I don't have time to go into all this research from our detailed study of Buddhism, but I'll recap some. Bill Rudge had been one of the top martial arts experts in the United States for a long time and then came out of it after getting saved. When contemplating whether to exit martial arts, he asked himself two questions: did God still want him involved with it? And should he speak out to Christians? In speaking out, here are just a couple of reasons he says we Christians should have nothing to do with martial arts. First, it instills pride and egotism. God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Second, Rudge says the sport also has a violent nature. Though he believes, and I would agree, that there certainly is a need for self-defense in some instances, the Bible also agrees, why not take boxing? Why does it have to be martial arts? There is always an alternative. Also, Rudge says self-defense was not even their focus. Their aim was on maiming and crippling the opponent. In fact, he gave this account.
One time before I quit, a man got so obnoxious with me that I actually considered taking his eyes out. I realized that this should not be an option for someone seeking to live under Christ's Lordship.
Yeah, I would say he's right. The main reason I am bringing Bill Rudge up is because he said martial arts clearly links you to Eastern mysticism and the occult. It's just like yoga, where people say they are only practicing it for exercise but then they tend to get into New Age and Hinduism. So, stop kidding yourself, the same problem is inherent with martial arts. Eventually, you are going to go in a direction away from God. Here is more from Rudge.
There are definite Eastern mystical and occultic overtones inherent in the martial arts. Many who initially begin martial arts training for self-defense, physical discipline, exercise, and health benefits, or for sports competition, eventually become involved in practices and philosophies that are diametrically opposed to biblical Christianity. In all styles of the martial arts, there is an underlying philosophy that eventually conflicts with the scripture. These disciplines have an alluring effect that tends to lead a person, little by little, into Eastern religious and occult philosophy and practice.
Sometimes when people keep pursuing martial arts, they get possessed. That is especially so with Asian cultures where practitioners get magical words permanently tattooed on their bodies in hopes of gaining power. In that way, they actually work toward having familiar spirits come inhabit them to get power. Here is a video transcript with an example of that from Japanese martial arts, and then we'll move on to Chinese witchcraft.
Narrator. Thousands gathered outside a Bangkok temple to get in touch with their spiritual side and pay respects to magic tattoo master, Na Huang Paperhoen. The Buddhist monk passed away in 2002 at age 79, but his following is more alive than ever, and his tattoos are said to cast a trance on believers.
Follower. I wear 17 Hanuman tattoos. They are very powerful. It is very hot in my body. Narrator. Some even become possessed by the spirits of the animal tattoos on their bodies. Follower. It doesn't matter how many tattoo scripts you put on the body. If your mind doesn't connect to the gods, then the gods won't possess you. Narrator.
The tattooing practice is done in the traditional method, using a long spear and ink made from herbs and even cigarette ash. Jean-Pierre Mestanza. Hey, guys, we're here at Wat Bang Pra.
We're 50 kilometers outside of Bangkok, and this place is known for Sak Yant tattoos.
Sak Yant tattoos are known for their magical properties. They can do anything from just bless you with normal, simple, good fortune to giving you the ability to dodge bullets.
And I'm here because I want to get one of these. Mestanza again, after getting a Sak Yant tattoo. Well, I just got my tattoo. I'm feeling pretty excited now. I mean, it hurts a little bit still, but not too much.
Now that I got my tattoo, tomorrow is the Y Crew Festival.
Mestanza at the festival the next day.
As soon as we got to the Y Crew Festival, my cameraman and I got separated because of the chaos and all the craziness in the crowd.
A lot of these people who have had tattoos before are getting into a trance, they are acting really crazy and wild. They are throwing themselves around. Some of them are jumping over people. Some of them are diving. All you have is whatever space is immediately around the hairs of your body.
So, it is a little chaotic. It is a little scary, really.
It is pretty dangerous. I can definitely tell you that.
The rest of the video shows numerous festival goers acting crazy while supposedly in trances.
So, keep getting tattoos and practicing martial arts because it's perfectly fine and nothing evil can happen, right? Wrong. As a person progresses deeper, they are not only led astray into Eastern occult practices, he or she may actually become possessed. Now, let's quickly run through some about Chinese witchcraft. China's religious practice in general is what is called polyphyletic, meaning diverse. They liken it to an empty bowl with various elements thrown in. As this description tells us, around China you will find a variety of beliefs from Buddhism to Confucius followers, and a lot more.
This may include the veneration of forces of nature and ancestors, exorcism of harmful forces, and a belief in the rational order of nature, the universe and reality that can be influenced by human beings and their rulers, as well as spirits and gods.
Some Chinese worship many gods or so-called immortals. And as with most all cultures around the world, they also get involved in witchcraft. There is too much information about Chinese witchcraft to deal with here, so this will be a very quick overview, Chinese witchcraft goes by the name Wuism, which is just a version of shamanism. Whether male or female, that is the Chinese version of a witch or witch doctor. In fact, at the time of this writing, there is a series on Netflix called Wu Assassins. Now that you know Wu means witch, you understand the series is about assassins that are witches. Wu specifically means shaman, wizard, and one who mediates with powers. Of course, that means they communicate with demonic entities. The female version is considered a sorceress, while males are sorcerers. Just like most worldwide witchcraft, the Chinese believe cosmic powers like the sun, the moon, stars, the wind, and clouds dominate nature, and that these Wu wizards perform practices meant to manipulate those forces. Later, we will see how modern witches practice the same. Chinese witches, shaman or Wu, perform rituals and dances, get into trances, and throw out bones. All that still goes on today.
The shaman would perform various ritual functions for groups of believers and local communities, such as the moon drum dance.
What does that sound like? It is the same as our American Indian shamanism, which is because the two are the exact same thing. Again, this is nothing new. In relation to its contemporary counterparts, Wu translates as witch, warlock, or witch doctor. Wu witch doctors supposedly have demonic powers for things like healing, with many Asians relying on those practitioners. Oftentimes in Asian communities and still to this day, when all else fails through modern medicine, the people turn to witchcraft from their witches, shamans or Wus. Many Asians believe illnesses can be caused by demons, and there is biblical evidence for that, but demons are not the source of those issues for everyone and all illness. Still, that is what they believe, so they use a Wu, witch doctor, and his supposedly demonic powers, to try to get rid of a so-called demonic ailment. As we saw earlier, attempting that is a losing battle. The way they try ridding themselves of demons, is through a Wu, using arrows, a spear or a lance, to go through the community air stabbing, pretending to stab those pesky demons to destroy them. Yeah, that is not going to work. Here are some examples: several times a year, and also during special occasions such as the funeral of a prince, hordes of exorcists would race shrieking through the city streets, enter the courtyards and homes, and thrust their spears into the air, attempting to expel the evil creatures. Also, prisoners would be dismembered, after which their parts would be scattered outside city gates to serve both as a deterrent to the demons and as an indication of their fate should they be captured. So, a witch doctor actually hacks up, as a warning to demons, and then symbolically pokes them to death or departure. That is their version of an exorcism. Although it is a crazy way to get rid of demons, especially since it doesn't work, unfortunately, the practice still goes on today. These Chinese Wus, or shamans, are also looked upon as rainmakers, which is exactly what our American Indian shaman do. And that too is the same old witchcraft from both cultures. Hollywood loves to glamorize the American Indian culture as having been such a peaceful society with a great love of nature before the European settlers came to mess it all up. But that is not the whole truth of their culture, because they were heavy-duty into witchcraft and other occult practices, including human sacrifice. So, those elements need to be added to the history for us to really understand what was going on there. The Chinese rainmakers, Wus, believe they can control rainfall and flooding through sacrificial rain dance ceremonies. They carry out an exhausting dance within a ring of fire that causes them to sweat profusely, with the drops of their perspiration supposedly producing rain. Hey, every day of the week, I'll take a modern-day cloud seeding from an airplane over Wu witch dances. Here's another prominent practice of Chinese witches. Wus could supposedly interpret dreams to tell a person what was really going on inside his or her head. Again, the practice continues to this day, but there has always been a dangerous side to it, with Wu supposedly able to interpret the guilty dreams of murderers, which made Wu feared and considered dangerous. What a powerful weapon that could be in the community. And speaking of power, within the Chinese culture, Wu also got involved in politics. In fact, some would say there have been Chinese kings who were Wu shamans that had worked their way all the way up in politics. We will end this chapter on an example of how these Wus made a lot of money with their witchcraft, just like our American Word of Faith teachers do in the Christian church's charismatic community. Those false teachers also rip people off with techniques that include their Christianized witchcraft. It is the same with the Chinese Wu, who sometimes got money and power through intimidation from their supposed magic, or witchcraft, and its consequences. People needed to be careful when interacting or opposing a Wu, because they could easily interpret your dream in a way that could ruin or even end your life. So, these Chinese ritual bureaucrats were flat-out witches, and it got me to thinking, it's a good thing that doesn't happen here in US politics, right? Wrong. At the time of your reading this and Lord willing, we may have our last study done that finishes up the many years it has taken us to cover world religions, cults, and the occult. That final stage will be about Freemasonry, the Illuminati, and other secret societies. If you don't think witchcraft has a big part to play in our politics today, just do a small background check on the Bush, Clinton and Obama families. Like Japan, China has their version of a written talisman. Japan's Ofuda is the same as the Chinese Fulu. Throughout Chinese history, that talisman was magic symbols and words painted or written on paper that were supposed to be able to summon deities or spirits. The uses were for exorcism and medicinal potions that supposedly helped with ailments. They even tried to make the magic easy to understand so that anyone could have the power to control the spirits. Besides, the talisman paper writings, the Chinese also made talisman coins. The Chinese would put their magic words on the coins just as the earlier Roman and Greek societies did for carrying around in the hopes of gaining good luck or protection. A popular material their portable talismans were made of was jade. Most people don't realize the sacred stone common to Asian witches in China was jade. That is likely the main reason Asian jade has become prevalent and popularized. Yellow jade supposedly assisted with earth-centered magic while blue jade was said to be able to aid in reaching the heavens.
Many witches and notable people wore jade as an amulet to protect their body from harm. And still today, Wu, Chinese witches, continue a presence in Chinese culture. They act as clairvoyants, diviners, charm weavers, and can supposedly get rid of evil spirits.
Of course, just like all the other countries we have looked at for their witchcraft, the Chinese witches are also into witchcraft mirrors. Their version is called the Bagua. Their Bagua mirrors are used as part of Chinese feng shui, which we dealt with in our Buddhism study. Feng shui is the Asian belief that we must arrange items around us in a way that attracts the best qi, energy. And these mirrors are not only used in Asian feng shui, they are also part of their witchcraft. For feng shui, a concave or convex mirror is recommended, while their witchcraft prescribes a flat one, just like the others we have seen from previous witchcraft cultures. These Bagua mirrors are still made and used today, so people can either find them at a witchcraft store or make them as an Asian lady talks about in this video transcript.
Hi. Today I wanted to talk about the Bagua mirror and how to work with it in traditional witchcraft. I do want to first make sure to distinguish using the Bagua mirror in feng shui versus traditional witchcraft. So, today we're going to be talking specifically about the occultists. The Bagua mirror is believed to be a form of spell crafting. You have the eight Bagua trigrams arranged in a particular way, the shape, the colors. Every aspect lends itself toward the energy raising and the magic of the Bagua mirror. And most of them will also have a Fu sigil, magic writing, or talisman, on the back, as well. Usually in feng shui, when you hear from feng shui masters, you're going to be looking for a Bagua mirror that's either a concave or a convex, depending on your particular feng shui needs. Usually it's because there are poison arrows of some kind around the area. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. For the practitioner of craft, for the witch, you're going to want to look for one that's flat, which trigram you want up top, and how you want to turn it is going to depend on what you're. You know what, I think I'm going to create a graphic for this. Now, here is how to work with the dial on your mirror. Example, say you want to employ defensive magic or warding to safeguard by agitating a force that someone else is sending toward you to hurt you. For that, work with thunder on your Bagua magical mirror. When using the mirror, turn the dial so the trigram thunder is up toward heaven. Now, if there are roadblocks challenging the flow of money, income, and prosperity toward you, cast wind so when using the mirror in your spell crafting, the wind trigram would be up. Typically, in East Asia, you would buy one of these that has already been consecrated and charged, ready to go from a master practitioner of the craft. But since you probably do not have access to that, I'll show you how to charge one of these yourself.
Yeah, no, thank you. So, those are still being promoted and used today. And part of the reason witchcraft is embedded and popular in Asian society even now, is because media there pushes their version of our animation industry like Disney that popularizes witchcraft. It's called anime, and it's huge in Asian cultures, as well as becoming popular here in United States. Anime is a heavy-duty promoter of witchcraft. Here are some anime witches with their cat spirits, familiar spirit demons, that supposedly act as animus helpful traveling companions, and the whole thing is straight up witchcraft.
Magical Girl is fantasy light novels, manga, comic magazines, anime, and video games which features girls who use magic or possess magical powers. Magical girls transform to unlock their powers and are often accompanied by an animal mascot, using wands or scepters as a weapon to fight monsters.
Today they are also working on a magical boy. In fact, it's so popular in China that a Chinese news organization, the South China Morning Post, said this.
Belief in witches runs rampant in some rural Chinese communities. A new study shows, in one rural farming community in southwestern China, 13.7% of the population have been labeled Jew or witches by their neighbors, SIC, according to a newspaper published on January 8 in Nature Human Behavior. SIC, Jew households are believed to raise snakes and poison people by providing them polluted food or simply by eye contact.
Of course, that eye contact refers to the evil eye, which is such a big part of witchcraft everywhere. But think about how over 13% of that community are witches. I don't know that we have a study on how many here in the United States are witches, but I think we'd probably be surprised if we could somehow get an accurate number. That amount would probably be much higher than we would think. Also, parallel with the witchcraft practices we have seen elsewhere, many Chinese people are not only into witchcraft, but also black magic. Again, the illusion that occultists try to portray is that there are different practices of witchcraft, which range from good to bad depending on whether they are magic, that is supposedly white, black, green, purple, or whatever color. I don't care what shade they want to choose, it's all bad in these Asian Wu witches, just like the word of faith people who have infiltrated our church here in America, are getting rich, driving fancy cars, and living in mansions from selling the supposed power of words. Even Asian politicians, along with Asians from all walks of life, pay these witch doctors big bucks. Here is an interesting video transcript about Wu witches.
Reporter, Step Fossin. He is going down into the world of mystery and magic, because Anwar's business went bankrupt. Now he spends his last money on the only person he believes can help him, Kijoko Bodo, the richest and most successful witch doctor in Indonesia. In his underground cave, Joko Bodo uses his own medicines, candles, swords, dolls, and perfume. Anwar is convinced the treatment will make him a rich man. Anwar. I completely believe he can do it. My friends were all successful after visiting Kijoko Bodo. Fossin. Upon request, the witch doctor also performs black magic. He even tells us that people order him to kill their political opponents by using magic, something he says he can do. Kijoko Bodo. Of course, it's against the law. But please prove it was done through magic. Fossin. It's in this dark underground cave in Jakarta, where people are coming to look for solutions to their love life, their medical problems, or even for political support. Their belief in magic is so big that they are willing to pay huge amounts of money. Even the most devout religious people think that magic is their last resort. Kijoko Bodo has made a fortune with his magic. He has built houses like castles and owns several expensive sports cars. He doesn't believe that what he does is wrong. As long as people are willing to pay huge amounts of money to fulfill their dreams with magic, Kijoko Bodo will be able to expand his fleet of cars. It doesn't seem likely the government will stop him anytime soon. High-profile clients, like parliament members or ministers, pay up to thousands of dollars depending on their request. In Indonesia, even the president himself, although he would deny it in public, is said to believe in magic. Elderly Asian man. If the Indonesian president denies it, that's probably because he is embarrassed with people like Barack Obama. Although, Obama, I'm sure, believes in this as well.
You will not find that last comment in our United States media. In that video, the elderly man at the end who looked like some sort of Indonesian scholar, just threw in Obama's name like it's common for people there to know what he claimed. I wonder why those 8 years of Obama's administration were so rough for the US and why does it feel like we're in a huge spiritual battle today? Of course, that is because we are. Now, as we close out this chapter, for those of us who think these kinds of witch doctor practices are not going to make it to our country, here is a quick quote about how Asian Americans can be witches too, many as a way to connect with the traditions they've learned about their culture of origin.
According to a Pew Research Center study, millennials are leaving traditional religions like Christianity at record numbers, and while many are identifying as atheist, non-religious, or just spiritual, a noticeable proportion are also identifying with occultism and practices like Wicca. While no hard statistics on the amount of witches exists, it's undeniable that more and more communities, places of worship, and shops have sprouted up to support the growing numbers of people identifying as hoodoo practitioners, African American spirituality, brujas, witches, Wiccans, and more.
So, just like Asian witchcraft got into and began to permeate Israel, that same version of witchcraft has been coming here to America, adding to the other forms of witchcraft that have also made inroads here. In the next chapter, we will head south from where we've been in the east. We will visit the witchcraft practices of India and the island nations in that area of the world. Most of us have seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. We came away thinking it was all just the Hollywood imagination and that human sacrifices do not actually occur in those places. But wait until you see India and the island's version of witchcraft. After that information, we will head over to Africa, followed by the Americas with the Aztecs and Mayans, and then finally get to European witchcraft.